Burns and Gambo starts now.
Straight up 2 o'clock on this Wednesday, September 1st?
Wow. Wild.
Wow.
I said that to Chelsea this morning, like, it's September 1st.
I saw on social media today a friend posted, there are now 4 months left in 2021. Time to kick it into gear.
Let's go.
I don't want to kick it into gear, Lisa.
Oh, you don't want to?
No, I'm tired.
You don't want to kick it into gear?
No.
You don't want this year to come to an end?
Well, I don't think it was so much that. It was like, what do you have left in you? Final sprint. How much more are you going to accomplish?
Oh, yeah.
How great are you going to be? And I'm like, I'm exhausted.
Yeah. Just exhausted. Yeah,
let me live.
I took it as time to start. Like, okay, you wasted 8 months.
I think it's been the most exhausting year.
More so than 2020?
Because, like, we had no, there was no breaks. There was no lull in the action in sports.
Yeah, that's true.
Especially with the Suns going to the NBA Finals.
Our summer, we worked the whole way through.
Oh,
anyone feels bad for us for covering the Suns.
No. People were mad that if you took a day off during the Suns, how dare you take a day off, you communist!
Oh, yeah.
I had people yelling at me because I missed two games. I went to Italy. I missed two games, just two.
Did they fly to Italy to yell at you? Because that's at least commitment.
No, they didn't fly to Italy to yell at me. But just it was that crazy every year. But we'll see. All right, so we got a big show plan in store for you today. Let's wait no further. Let's tell you what our top story of the day is.
Burns and Gambo, the weigh-in, brought to you by Revitalize Weight Loss.
All right, I tweeted out early this morning that you should expect that I expect the Cardinals are going to, and I'll just read the tweet so I don't mince my own words. This morning at about 10 o'clock in the morning, I said, I expect the Cardinals to add multiple cornerbacks by the end of the week. If these players are veterans, they could be on the practice squad but flexed to play in games. And here's where my hint comes. These are players who would have become free agents when released and not able to be claimed. So they're vetted players. These are players who would have become free agents when released. So they were not guys that could be claimed by another team because they've invested, they got enough time. So they immediately become free agents. The two players they have signed to the practice squad are cornerback Rasul Douglas and cornerback Antonio Hamilton. We just broke the Hamilton story about 40 minutes ago that Hamilton is on the practice squad. Now, a couple of things to know. You could flex two players each week from the practice squad onto the regular roster. So these guys, if they play, these guys are candidates to be flexed onto the regular roster. These are veteran players, right? They're not guys that they have experience. Both of these guys are veteran players. They've been in a league. They've played in a number of games. Douglas was waived by the Texans on Monday. He spent less than a week with the Texans before he's let go. He's 27 years old. He started 60 games over the last 4 years. He had a career-high 62 tackles and 9 pass breakups for Carolina last season. And even the reports when he got cut, he should be able to find at least a depth role elsewhere. That's what he is. Now, we've also talked about they're not going to find anybody better than their top three. Douglas is 6'2", 209 pounds, so he comes with some good size. He's been with Philadelphia, Carolina, so he's got some experience there. Antonio Hamilton, he was let go by the Bucks. Veteran cornerback, they let him go. He signed with the Bucks in May. He was with the Chiefs last year, where he appeared in all 16 games. Really good special teams player, so he was a good special teams player with the Giants, with Kansas City. He was an undrafted free agent in 2016, signed with the Raiders. He's played in 57 games in 5 years with a couple of starts. So you're getting guys that have been in a league for a while, that know how to play the game. They're not going to be better than the top three, but they're going to give you the depth that you need and the experience you need. And both of these guys, again, practice squad guys that could very easily get to the point where they're flexed and available for the Cardinals on Sunday.
Look,
that was a lot to say. But, you talk for 3 minutes now, please.
They had to get some, obviously, had to get some experience at that position. If you just go with these two guys they just added, Rasul Douglas and Antonio Hamilton, that's a combined 62 games of experience over just the last two seasons. Whereas two of basically your only three corners that you could count on for the Cardinals before these two signings, Marco Wilson and Robert Alford had a combined 0 games of experience over the last 2 years. I mean, Alford hasn't played in 2 years. It's great that he's supposed to be good, and I don't doubt that he can be. He hasn't played in 2 years. And Marco Wilson's never played an NFL game. So I would refer back to what you were saying yesterday. Most likely any guys you get right now are not going to step in and be starters for your team, but you had to have some depth because the second Malcolm Butler retired, you didn't have a safety net for a rookie and a guy that hasn't played in 2 years.
No, I'm sure they scoured the, you know, we were talking about that. They're going to scour that waiver wire. There are 100 cornerbacks that were available. I mean, over 100. Everybody was cutting cornerbacks. I mean, every cut list had 3, 4, 5 cornerbacks on it. So you're looking at, where can I get the best guy? Where can I get somebody? Now, again, I don't know if the Cardinals, there were 27 players claimed, I think. The Cardinals were 16th in the pecking order. So we don't know if they put a claim in on anybody. Because if you put a claim in on somebody and you're 16th and somebody 10th put a claim in too, you don't get them. We don't know about it. We don't get to hear about it. So I cannot tell anybody if the Cardinals did put a claim in on a player. But I do know that the two players that they're adding, because they're veterans and vetted players, they're not eligible to be claimed. They immediately go to free agency. So they're not eligible to be claimed. So by grabbing these guys and signing them, the Cardinals are able to, you know, not have to worry about where their positioning is on the claim order, which is in the middle of the damn thing at 16. They're in a better position just to go get these veteran players.
Yeah, and a guy like Douglas, I mean, you know, it's what, 60 games of experience. His rookie year, he was on Philadelphia when they won the Super Bowl. I mean,
yeah.
that's like, you know, that's good experience to have. It doesn't mean that it automatically translates for the Cardinals, but they were obviously in survival mode after what happened yesterday. Honestly, Gamble, I think even if Malcolm Butler hadn't retired, they probably still would have gone out and added a veteran corner.
They would have. Yeah. They would have added one more. I mean, the thing about Douglas, you're looking at, right, 2017 third-round pick, spent the first 3 years with Philadelphia, got cut by them in the preseason. Panthers claimed him, and then he started 11 games for them. You know, Pro Football Focus, they slotted him just outside its top 60 at cornerback, which isn't terrible. He did play special teams with the Eagles during their Super Bowl run, and he started in 2 playoff contests. So he's just about 27 years old. He's got 29 career games that he started. So you look at him, and he's a West Virginia guy. So this is and good size. So to me, it makes sense. Now, you know, whether these guys can help or not, look, you're looking for depth. You're looking for experience. You're looking for guys that have played. I said this several times. You know this. They're not going to find anybody better than their top 3, and I didn't think they would. But could they find somebody better than their 4th and 5th guy? Yeah, they just did. So these guys come in, they'll very likely be your 4th and 5th cornerback. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with Tay Gowan, whether he's a practice squad guy or he makes the roster. I'm not sure. But I do know that there's some depth now at the cornerback spot, proven depth with guys that have experience, which is a lot better than having, you know, no experience and unproven guys there.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a position that is easy to exploit if you're an opposing team. If you have a good quarterback, I mean, teams are going to look and be like, okay, you have no experience here or here, right where we're trying to pass. And certainly they had to do something. They also added some players to the practice squad today. And as you said earlier this week, Jace Whitaker is on the practice squad. So that's another corner that they at least have in the system. Cliff Kingsbury was asked this afternoon what his expectations are for practice squad guys.
Really, guys that we believe, I mean, in this COVID era can come in and be ready to go, know our system, can pick it up quickly, and then we can put them in and still execute what we want to do.
You got to piece it together on the fly, and that's what they're doing. But to go out and get 2 veteran guys is huge.
Yeah, and like I said, these guys will come in, they'll get a bunch of practices in, they'll, you know, just the ability to be flexed into the, and I'm sure a lot of people don't understand it, but you can flex 2 roster, you could flex 2 of your practice squad guys each week, so maybe both of them get flexed, maybe one of them gets flexed. I would think at least one of these guys is flexed. At least one is flexed onto the roster for Sunday. So when they open up their season against Tennessee, I would not be surprised if one of these guys is on the roster and dressed for game day.
Yeah, so I guess maybe we should look at that. That's only a week and a half away. You're going into that game against Tennessee that obviously A.J. Brown and Julio Jones, that's pretty good receiving core, and you're running out there with Byron Murphy, Robert Alford, Marco Wilson, and probably one of these guys.
Yeah, I mean, and I think these guys, first of all, they've been playing. They've been in camps. It's not like they're not in shape. They're in shape. You know, I don't know who has the edge, but Rasul Douglas did start 11 games last year, had the 9 passes defended, 62 tackles. So he played, you know, he started 11 games, but he played in 14. So, and he's been in training camps, 2 different training camps this year. former third round pick out of West Virginia, like we said. This is a guy that has enough experience and he's been in camp, and both of them, Hamilton too. Neither of these guys like, oh, I got to get in shape. It's not like these guys were sitting on the couch waiting for a phone call. These guys have been in camp and they just got cut. So they're definitely in shape and ready to play. Now they just got to get up to speed with Vance Joseph's defense.
Yeah, Douglas in particular, nothing against Hamilton, but Douglas, just looking at his profile as he joins this team, I mean, you're talking about a third-round pick. You're talking about a guy that, as we said, was on a Super Bowl winner as a rookie. But in his whole career, he could have played a possible 64 games. He's played 60 of them. So
yes.
I mean, this is a guy that plays.
Yeah.
You know, decent teams.
You know, listen, you're not gonna pound our chest. Oh my God, what a great signing. It's a good signing. It's a good signing. To get veteran players who have starts under their belt that can come in and be depth guys, that's what you were looking for. Okay. This isn't earth shattering, but it was necessary. It was necessary to get guys like this. Necessary to get guys that could play, that have experience in a pinch if you need them to come in. They've got a bunch of starts under their belt. They got games under their belt. It was necessary, and they were able to do that. So they got two guys. You know, my understanding is they're going to get these things done by Friday. It's Wednesday. They got them done by Wednesday. That's good for them. Now they can breathe a little bit of a sigh of relief.
Text Sparky to 620-620 and kick off the college football season with your favorite Arizona sports host and special guest for our Valley Virtual Series presented by 72 Sold, where you can get a higher price. Plus, we'll be giving away college football tickets, so text Sparky to 620-620. When we come back, Cliff Kingsbury spoke today, gave a little insight on what he sees out of Andy Isabella and also his first reaction publicly to the Malcolm Butler retirement. That's next, Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. All right, it's been an eventful offseason for Cliff Kingsbury, huh?
Yeah, I guess so.
If you think about it, like, so he comes in, his very first year, Patrick Peterson gets suspended. They take a quarterback with the first overall pick. Then last year, they don't really have a preseason. And now this year, the guy that was supposed to be, he was tabbed to be their number one corner, retires a week and a half before the season
starts.
He's
had his issues with cornerbacks, huh?
Yeah,
cornerback is just taboo for Cliff Kingsbury.
Apparently.
Pete suspended for six games, and you got to put Byron Murphy out there. But look at Byron Murphy now. Look at me now. I mean, he's fantastic. He's just a solid player. He's a solid player. I mean, he can play inside. He can play outside. He can cover number one guys. So, he's your guy going forward. The Malcolm Butler thing didn't work out. It's a shame. So now you've got two other guys that you just brought in today that are veteran players that can add depth to the rotation. But you're going to really rely on Murphy, and you're going to rely on Robert Alford, and you're going to rely on this kid Marco Wilson. You know, and that's hard. That's hard to rely on a rookie, but he's got the skill set and the athleticism to be good. But I don't know how much you expect out of him right out of the gate. I think you have to expect growing pains. And you have to expect, you know, teams are in nickel coverage 75% of the time, three cornerbacks on the field, 75% of the time. You got to figure out these coaches are going to go after those guys.
Yeah.
They are going to go after the young player.
I guess the flip side is if you know teams are going to go after Marco Wilson because he's a rookie the first few games.
I go after Robert Alford, too. You haven't played in 2 years, buddy. Let's see.
Yeah.
Last time you played was, 2018, right?
Yeah.
You didn't play 19. You didn't play 20.
It's been a while.
I'm going to go after you. Let's see what you have. I haven't seen you play in years. I'm going to challenge him early.
Well, we were talking about Cardinals yesterday that had signed and never played with the team. I couldn't help but think like Robert Alford. He still hasn't played with the team. We could
right.
put him on that list. But
He's one of the veterans on the team.
Yeah.
He's been here for a long time.
But, I mean, I guess if you know the other team's going to attack your rookie or your guy that hasn't played in 2 years, at least the very small silver lining is at least you know where the ball's going. So you can prepare your defense
right.
that way. Cliff was asked today, what happened with Butler? When were you surprised by it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a personal question that, you'd have to ask him. But as an organization and talking with his people, this is the spot we came to.
Did it take you and everyone by surprise when this all came up?
Yeah, I would say it was a surprise. I mean, we all like Malcolm, like what he's about. We know he's a really good player in this league. And like I said, it was a personal decision of his.
What was the timeline of it since we're not privy to all back channel conversations?
The timeline? I'd just say over the last week.
So
I thought Cliff was very honest there.
Yeah.
I was surprised by a timeline over the last week this all came. So I thought that instead of Cliff gave you real answers
yeah.
there. He gave you real answers. I talked with his people. I didn't talk with him. I talked with his people. So, he probably left and, any conversation was with, his agents and representatives and maybe not with him. And he said it transpired over a week. And he said he was surprised by it. So I thought you got real solid answers out of Cliff right there.
We don't need to, or I don't need to know what the personal situation was for Malcolm Butler. Like, that's personal. But I do feel like there's parts of the story that we don't know that we could know. You know what I mean? Like, if you're about to leave and retire abruptly, why aren't you talking to the coach? Or, you know, and maybe there's a good reason, but I just, some of the stuff that we hear, because you're right, Cliff didn't really, he didn't hide anything there. He didn't, you know, he didn't give anything crazy away, but I mean, that's his job as a coach, is to sort of, unfortunately, a situation like this, filter what is said, and that's a 32-second clip of him being pretty honest.
Yeah. Now, it's, if this would have happened 6 weeks ago, if he would have got to camp, practiced for a week, and said, my heart's not in it, I don't want to play anymore. Now, he did say about something about leaving the door open, right?
Yeah. So
I don't like this. But guy, play that cut. Clip.
Is the line of communication still open with Malcolm's people, or is it, have you pretty much moved on at this point?
Yeah, it's always going to be open.
We talked about this before the show. Wouldn't it be almost more weird now if Malcolm Butler came back?
I don't want him back.
Like, it's just, it would be, and with each passing day, it would get more strange. Like, if the story breaks in an hour, hey, Malcolm Butler's coming back, okay, then in 2 weeks we'll look back as this was a very strange 48 hours. But if you start to get like 2 or 3 weeks down the line and we're in the season, and because they still have the rights to Malcolm Butler if he unretires, and he was on the Cardinals in like week five, wouldn't that be strange?
I just, listen, I don't know. If your heart's not in, your heart's, you to come to that decision to walk away from millions of dollars and retire.
Yeah.
Like, it takes a lot. It takes a lot to do that. Like, you really got to know what you're doing. Like, if you're 50-50 on it, usually those guys stay.
Yeah.
If I'm not sure what I'm going to do, I'm going to stay. I don't want to walk away from potentially $3-plus million that he could have made with some incentives, over $3 million. You can say what you want about how much money you made, but he's probably never in his life going to have a paycheck that gives him $2 to $3 million in a season. Ever again, for the rest of his life, the chances are that he will not make $2 to $3 million in a year once he's, you know, if he's retired. So if you're 50-50 on that, you guys don't retire when they're 50-50. You've got to be like, okay, that's it. I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore. I'm retiring. So I don't want that guy back. I don't, like, if he changes, has a change of heart in a week or two, I'm not, me personally, I don't want him back. Because I don't know how much he's going to give to this team. If your heart's not in it, your heart's not in it.
I would at least want to know why, like, the Cardinals were scrubbed from the social media and everything at that point. If he's, if a week from now he's like, he wants to come back, like, this, I want to know why was that public?
There's something behind the scenes probably that we don't really know about. I mean, was he upset? He wasn't playing very well in the preseason. Was he going to get beat out by somebody and he wasn't happy with that? I mean, I don't know.
He still don't retire, though. You wouldn't think.
Listen, people retire for different reasons. But again, like, you've got to know that you don't want to do this anymore.
Well, it's a good point.
Like, look at Fitz. Like, look at Larry Fitzgerald.
Yeah.
He doesn't want to play right now. Doesn't want to play. His heart's not in it, right?
Yeah.
Is he here? Was he here at camp?
He was not.
No. Don't fake that stuff.
No.
Hard to fake that in a sport like this.
And that's Larry
Hard
Fitzgerald.
To fake it.
And he still technically hasn't retired yet. But to your point on the money. You know, you'll hear it when a guy holds out. Like, when Le'Veon Bell held out a couple years ago, it was like, oh, look at all this money he's losing. But you know Le'Veon Bell thinks, I'm going to get paid that and more. I'm going to make up for it next year, year beyond. When you retire and leave money on the table, you must really not want to play. Because, to your 100%. Point, you're not getting that money next year or the year after. This
never. Like, never. Like, the chances of him making that type of money ever again are slim. He's made a lot of money in his career. So when you walk away from a big paycheck like that, look, there's plenty of guys in this league, okay, that whose hearts aren't in it 100%, but the money's just too good. So you go through the motions and you try to trick people. You don't think that happens?
No.
All the time.
It definitely happens.
Plenty of guys in this league, you know, that just, they don't love to play the game, but they're big and they're strong and the money's good. You may not love it, but you do it because, you know, what else are you going to do to make? You're not going to make that kind of money doing anything else.
I'm pretty sure I drafted all those guys on my fantasy team last year. Andy Isabella.
No fantasy football this year for the station.
Look at that.
No fantasy football.
You're not going to ask me what it felt like to win last year?
Did you win last year?
I did win last year. I got the same prize you got, though.
Nothing. You guys still got. I know. How'd you do the year before?
That's when you won, isn't
you
it?
Okay. You lost to me.
Look at this. The two defending champs doing this show
Did
together.
You lose to me in the championship or the semis?
No, I lost in the semis.
And then I beat Burns in the finals.
And that's why he's not here this week. He takes a week before every season to recover from that emotionally.
For a guy who hates fantasy football, you sure do remember the standings and the results from 2 years ago.
I know. All I know is I won, man. All I know is I won. Which means, listen, I don't know anything about fantasy football. It just means that you guys, you don't really know what you're doing either.
Apparently.
That's what it means.
Because then it was easy to win.
The fact that I won should be embarrassment to everybody at this radio station that I won fantasy football. Instead, I never played, and I won. I beat everybody. It should be an embarrassment to all of you.
It's the equivalent. It's the equivalent of the secretary in the office winning the March Madness pool.
Exactly. I'll go with that.
Randomly picks teams.
I'll go with that. I'm the secretary, and somehow I won. You guys should all be embarrassed.
There is always that person that picks based on mascot, but if I recall, you just picked based on you refused to take anybody associated with the Cowboys. I remember that was your draft strategy.
Okay, so my favorite team is as a kid growing up, and my whole life was the Giants.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't have taken anybody on the Eagles or, at that time, they were the Redskins. Or were they the football? No, they were the Redskins at that time. The Washington football team,
okay.
The Eagles, or the Cowboys. I wouldn't have taken anybody from any of those teams.
Oh, so you wiped that whole division out.
I just wiped the whole division
out. That's probably why you won then, in retrospect. Because
I wiped out a bad
horrible
division.
Yeah. We just figured out your strategy and why it worked so well. Real quick here, Cliff Kingsbury on Andy Isabella, who obviously made the team. You know, a lot of people look at that. They look at the Rondale Moore pick, and they're kind of like, okay, well, are you going to play both these guys? Is what he had to say.
Speed, you know, I mean, speed like that is rare. And so we'll see how it all works out. Rondell brings a different element with the quick twitch in space, sudden movement stuff. And Andy is a real burner down the field. And so we could definitely have him on the same field at the same time if that is kind of how the game plan plays out.
That's interesting.
Well, I mean, Cliff knows that, you know, I mean, the Italians dominated track and field in the Olympics this past Olympics. They did. They won all of the major events. They won the big relay. They won the big, you know, 100 meters, the 4x100. What are you looking
at? You're forgetting about Jamaica.
Yeah, I was going to say.
What about
the
Jamaica?
Women? They absolutely crushed the sprints.
The women?
Yeah.
I'm not talking about women. You know, women aren't playing in the NFL.
Oh.
Well, I'm just talking about Cliff knows that Italians are.
You said they won every event.
They won all the big events in track and field, in sprinting.
All the big men's events.
The fast events where you need to be really fast was won by the Italians.
Is there a lot of football catching in track and field? That's my follow-up question.
Just running in a straight line.
Yeah, like if you have somebody throwing the ball and then they run, I'd feel better about that. My whole family is Italian. I'm not going to shoot you down, but I knew Sarah was going to come in with some Jamaica because every time I turned the Olympics on, Jamaica was winning an event.
It's just facts. Yeah. I'm Italian too.
Yeah, I'm on.
We've all here got a little bit of Italian in us.
We should order pizza.
I wouldn't have thought Lipinski.
That name is not Italian, but yeah. I have grandparents on both sides, great grandparents on both sides from Italy.
So both sides have some. Look at that. Yes. I did not know. See, you learned something today.
You
and you're Italian too?
Yeah. From Vinciatoro, a little village.
How much? Both sides of the family or one side?
One side.
Okay.
My mom's 50%. My grandfather was 100%.
So you're a quarter Italian?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, molto bene.
Hey.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I don't speak any Italian.
That was clear by your response.
No,
no parla italiano.
You turned into the Fonz for a second.
No, un poco español.
Oh, let's speak a little Spanish? Yeah. Some of it's the same. It's the same.
Yeah, there's some crossover.
Poco is like un po.
Exactly.
So some of it's crossover.
I knew we'd get
speak
to this
Spanish,
point, though.
Well, now that we've covered the foreign language portion of the Burns and Gambo show.
If you're trying to learn a language, this is the show for you. When we come back, ASU football starts up tomorrow, and we know external expectations are pretty high. Sounds like internal expectations are very high, at least from one player. We'll get into that next. The Burns and Gambo show, Luke Lipinski in for Dave Burns on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
The Burns and Gambo need to know Twitter poll, presented by Sanderson Ford.
I want it noted that I did remember the Twitter poll was coming up right now, Sarah, but then Bird played the sounder anyway, so.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. Sanderson Ford Twitter poll. I've been sponsoring on Twitter poll for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Head on over to Sanderson Ford. 0% financing on an F-150 right now at Sanderson Ford.
There we go.
I have not seen the question today. I don't even know what it is.
Okay.
I was very busy, so I did not even get to participate in it.
Well, now is your lucky time to participate. We're looking at the Cardinals 53-man roster, which has been made official, or the initial 53 at least. And Chris Trevler is part of that group as the third string quarterback. So we are asking, do you agree with the Cardinals' decision to include him on the initial 53-man? Does he need to be there? Yes or no?
No,
I don't.
He doesn't need to be there. He's a third string quarterback.
Yeah.
They got a good backup in Colt McCoy. If you get to your third string quarterback, you're in a boatload of trouble anyway. You get the backup, usually you're in a boatload of trouble.
Right.
But at least they've got a backup that's capable of winning some games and keeping him competitive. Do I think that he needs? No, I would say no. I'm going to vote no.
I thought that when I heard Cliff Kingsbury give his reasoning, I would have more of like an understanding, and we'll play that a little bit later on in the show. I still don't. I don't know why he's on the team.
Didn't do it for you?
No.
Yeah.
Because now you have three quarterbacks. It's not like it's an unlimited roster. Like,
right.
You've got depth issues at other positions.
Finite space. Exactly. Yeah. And that, I think, is why 72% of our voters said no. They do not agree with the Cardinals' decision to have Strebler on the 53-man. And 28% say yes. They're good with it. So there you go.
All right. Thank you, Sarah.
You're welcome.
Thank you for the poll question, which I remembered on time.
And, yeah. How about that?
Big
Amazing.
Moment for me.
He's so good at his job.
Hey, thanks. This quote, and actually, Gamble, you're the one that found this, of Chase Lucas. It was said at Pac-12 Media Day, and it's funny because the story that you sent from The Athletic, they even say in there, kind of went unnoticed. And the quote is, this is from Chase Lucas. Me and Jaden were talking, and we said, if we don't do it this year, I don't know if Arizona State will ever be able to do it. We have the team, man. We have every aspect of the team that we need.
And hard to argue that.
He's right.
Look, they have a good offensive line. They have three really talented running backs. Two are fantastic. Matter of fact, I was looking at something today that was the big board by Mel Kiper's big board. His running backs, here's his top five running backs. Breece Hall, Iowa State. Isaiah Spiller from Texas A&M. Kyren Williams, Notre Dame. Rashad White, ASU. Yeah. Has him as the fourth best running back in the country right now on his big board. Fourth best.
ASU's
running back. You know, guys that are coming out for the draft.
Yeah.
He's got him as one of the best running backs in the draft coming out. So, like, they're loaded at running back. They're loaded on defense. They got a great young quarterback. The big question mark, which we went over in detail yesterday, was the wide receiver spot. But I like Ricky Pearsall and... Buckley Shelton a little bit, and they got the big kid who's like 6'7", 6'8", a wide receiver. Not Hodges, the tight end, the other kid. There's some talent there, but they don't have a N'Keal Harry type. They don't have a Brandon Ayuk type. So that's the one thing. But I don't know if I disagree with this comment from Chase Lucas. You're set up to win this year. That's why when we had a question, Jordan's, we had a question not too long ago. Would like if ASU just gets to the Pac-12 championship game, would that be good enough and lose? And I was like, no, that's not good enough. And my reasoning, and I changed Burnsy's mind on it, my reasoning is that they are set up to win right now. They're set up to win now. I kind of agree with Chase Lucas.
I do too, and I can't help but think in the back of my mind, I'm not sure, because it's part of his quote, I'm not sure when they're going to be set up like this again. Even, look, the investigation always is going to hang over any thoughts as an ASU fan. It's like, okay, well, if this might be the top of the mountain, so you got to cash in right now. But even if that wasn't there, this team, and I've said this a million times, even in 2019, I was looking forward to 2020 with the way this team was set up. Well, 2020 didn't really happen for them. They played four games. This is the year where you are really set up. I cannot help, though, Gambo, but think about the other side of it, of it's not just, hey, they should be really good this year. The other part is, when are they going to be this talented again?
You know, that's why I was surprised. And I think, you know, one of the best guys that covers that team is Doug Howler. He does an amazing job. His prediction has them going 5-4 in the Pac-12.
He has them extremely disappointed if they do that.
I would too, right? He's got 8-4 overall, 5-4 in the Pac-12. That was in his prediction piece. That was on The Athletic. He says a 5-1, 6-0 start isn't unreasonable. He goes, but the second half is difficult. They host Washington State, USC, and Arizona. But they got to go visit Utah, Washington, and Oregon State, the last two in consecutive weeks. So his prediction, he's got him going 5-4 in the Pac-12. That would, you know, that's going to get you in a mediocre bowl game.
Cool.
You're going to lose all your seniors on defense. You might lose Jaden Daniels. I don't know. You'll probably lose your top running back, and I don't think you're going to come back next year. You don't have a great recruiting class right now because you've lost some kids. I think they only got five guys committed for next year, and they've had a couple of guys pull out probably because of the investigation. They're set up to win now, so 5-4 in the Pac-12 would be extremely, extremely disappointing, and I'll take it a step further. If they go 5-4 in the Pac-12, I don't care about the investigation. That's it for Herm.
Yeah, you know, I like...
Take the investigation out of it. Do you agree with me or no?
I think there's a conversation to be had. As much as I like Herm,
uh-huh,
they've never won more than eight games. Now, he's been here for 3 years. One of the years, they didn't even play eight games. But the other 2 years, like, okay, so even 2019, like, it felt really good. Remember how that season started, though? They went 3-0, they beat Michigan State, and you could tell. And a lot of the guys on the team were talking about going to the college football playoff and how that had been their goal. And then they lost to Colorado. They won a couple. They were 5-1. But once they couldn't go all the way, they completely fell apart. They lost 4-0. They finished that season with 8 wins. The previous year, they won 7.
The ESPN did a thing today where they did, you know, predicting every college football Power 5 conference. Okay?
Okay.
And in this, in their Pac-12, they said a Pac-12 team makes the college football playoffs. Okay? They think a team from the Pac-12 is going to make the playoffs. Then they say this: Arizona State falls apart. The Sun Devils have been largely mediocre in Herm Edwards' tenure so far. It's hard to take away much from last season's 2-2 record. Da 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 da. They've been a popular choice to be the league's breakout team in 2021, but it's difficult to imagine that actually happening with a looming NCAA investigation into alleged recruiting violations hanging over the program. Three of their top recruiters are on the sidelines, administrative lead. And Edwards compared this situation to his inability to hit a curveball as a kid. And it said, this time it must feel like Sandy Koufax is throwing them. So they think ASU falls apart. Doug Howell's got them losing 4 games. I think if they have a miserable season, like if they have a very disappointing season, I think there could be a change at the head coach.
I think you got to win 10 games. And then whatever that gets you, I'm not, you know, if they make the Pac-12 championship and don't win the Pac-12, I'm not going to be extremely disappointed. But it's funny how, and it's probably deserved, I guess, depending on how the investigation plays out, as much as it hurts me to say that, that has taken the shine off everything. Because when they went 7-6 in year one, everybody was like, okay, Herm's got this. And they went 8-5 in year two. And at the time, everybody was like, he's got them going in the right direction. You can't blame last year on him. And yet now we're hearing predictions of the team of, like, he's been mediocre the whole time. That wasn't the case. That wasn't the perception of him when he stepped off the field in 2019. But in the scenario you're pointing out, or Doug Howler's pointing out, if they go 5-4 in the conference, that is unacceptable with this roster.
With this team loaded like that, it would be extremely disappointing. I've got them winning the Pac-12 South. So I have them winning the Pac-12 South. I think that they are loaded, and I think they'll do very well.
My only concern is they tend to play a lot of close games. And we've seen in the past when they have high expectations, if things don't go perfectly, they kind of have fallen apart in the past. I'm with you. I think they win the Pac-12 South. It's either them or USC. It better be them or USC. And if they don't, because USC had some amazing 12-0 year, okay, then I guess
they should have beat USC last year. They should have beat UCLA last year. They just fell apart.
Yeah. Have you subscribed to the Burns and Gambo podcast?
Yes.
Good. Subscribe right now on your iPhone or Android, and you'll never miss any of the show. It's the Burns and Gambo podcast.
I listen every day.
This week by your Valley Chevy. Drive home and listen to yourself.
I've listened to every show. I never miss a show.
All right. When we come back, the D-backs, they kept missing the ball last night for the first 7 innings. Nearly no hit by the Padres. We'll discuss it next. Burns and Gambo show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
And a little floater. That ball may get down, and it will. A base hit. So the no-hitter's gone. David Peralta just fisted one out there to left center. Cronenworth went out. He probably had the best shot at it, and if he'd have caught it, it would have been an over-the-shoulder catch. It was in front of both Profar and Grisham. And the Diamondbacks had their first hit of the night.
Well, Greg Schulte with the call there. Gambo, unfortunately, that was the highlight of the game for the Diamondbacks last night.
Shut out by the Padres, 3-0, held to 3 hits. Carson Kelly, Christian Walker, and Peralta. Peralta does break up the no-hitter, but by that time, they had removed Blake Snell, the starter, from the game. He had gone 7 innings with a no-hitter, and he was at 107 pitches. He struck out 10, he walked 2. He did throw 122 in his last start, so they made the decision to take him out. And he even agreed with the decision, Blake Snell did, saying, do I really want to throw 140 pitches when I'm going to be more needed the rest of the month instead of going 140? So he agreed with that. So Peralta gets the pinch hit, bloop single off of Pierce Johnson in the 8th. In the 9th, as bad as it was, the Diamondbacks had the tying run at the plate in the 9th inning. Paven Smith is up. As the tying run in the 9th inning, Kelly singled, Walker single, but Mark Melanson struck out Paven Smith, and the Diamondbacks got shut out. And last night, they got their 90th loss of the season before we hit September 1st.
It
90 losses by the end of August.
Not great.
I wouldn't. That's
probably, not great. Probably categorize that as poor, even. It felt like watching that game. if Blake Snell finished the game that they weren't getting a hit, didn't it? Like, it just, and I understand what the Padres' reasoning, whatever. I always have a hard time seeing a pitcher get pulled when they are throwing a no-hitter. 107 pitches isn't that much. I heard his reasoning at the end of the game, like if you go 15, 16 more pitches an inning. You remember when Tyler Gilbert threw the no-hitter, though, a couple weeks ago? What really helped him out was the Padres swung at the first pitch three straight batters in the eighth inning.
Yeah, he got out of it quickly. Yeah.
I never understood that.
There was some leeway there to let him go a little bit further. So I think with him, they would have. But Snell, like, they're trying to make the playoffs, and Snell's a big part of what they do. So, like, they probably felt like it was. And how many, man, a no-hitter's not what it's used to. Can we just say this? A no-hitter's not what it used to be. It's nice to have it, but it's not. Tyler Gilbert threw a no-hitter. There's been, what, 9 or 10 no-hitters this year?
Technically, the D-backs
Madison
don't
Bumgarner
have to.
Got
Bumgarner
him.
Did
Madison
throw one,
Bumgarner
yeah.
was a no-hitter. Like, it's not, it's just, it's not what it used to be. A no-hitter is not what it used to be. So, nice to have it, probably good on your resume, good to tell the grandkids, I threw a no-hitter, but I just, in this day and age, man, there's enough of them to where it's not as special anymore as it used to be.
It just feels like every time I'm watching Blake Snell pitch, he's pitching really well and his manager's pulling him early. I mean, that was the case in the World Series against the Dodgers, too.
That was an absolute disaster. That was probably terrible. One of the dumbest decisions we've ever seen.
Well, it only cost them the World Series, so not a big deal.
Yeah, it was just not a good game for the Diamondbacks last night. There is good news, though, today. And now, let me tell you something. This guy is the biggest tease in one of the biggest teases. We should do a topic on that. What sports figures in Arizona were the biggest teases? Because, you know, we had a fun topic yesterday that got a lot of traction. I can't remember what it was, but we did have a
got so much traction.
Shortest
and you came
10
up with
years
it
with Arizona sports.
Yeah, big names that never really actually played very much here.
Yeah, the sometimes the brain just does not really work.
I hear that.
Yeah, you with me?
I'm with you.
I thought we were ramping it up for the end of 2021, guys.
No, you are. I'm not.
No, I didn't agree to that.
Brett Hull, right? I had Brett. Now that you bring it up, now
Richie
I remember.
Michael Crabtree.
Sexton, Brett Hull, Michael Crabtree. Who were the biggest teases? Because Luke Weaver right now is throwing a shutout. Oh, he actually just gave up a run in the sixth inning.
Oh, there you go.
Luke Weaver is in the sixth inning. He just gave up the first run. He's got four hits. He's given up one run. He struck out three. He's pitching great.
Yeah.
And like there are times like I'm ready to discard Luke Weaver. Hey, should they keep Luke Weaver? No. And then he pitches like this. Like, should they keep Luke Weaver? Yes. And then his next outing, he's going to be give up seven runs and be like, no. And then he's like, this guy's a tease.
Yeah.
Like, there are times that you like, he's really good. And there are times he's really bad. And you're just like, you just don't know what to, you don't know what to do.
No, and then he keeps getting hurt, which I know is not his fault, but that first season he was here, it was like, okay, they got a guy that's like locked in as the four, but could be the three and maybe even the two, the number two starter in a pinch if they had to, and he just hasn't been that guy since until today, until you started talking about him and he gave up a home run to Trent Grisham.
Yeah, you know who else was a big tease? Yeah, the future Cy Young Award winner in the American League. Was it Robbie Ray a tease? He could strike out 10 batters, but he couldn't get out of the fifth inning, and now he is on his way to maybe winning the American League Cy Young Award. Pitched seven innings against the Orioles last night. He reached 1,000 strikeouts for his career. It's the most strikeouts through a player's first 1,000 innings in Major League Baseball history. In the history of Major League Baseball.
It's ridiculous.
He's got the most strikeouts through 1,000 innings. He has been absolutely lights. He's averaging 11 strikeouts per 9 innings, which, as it currently stands, is the best mark in Major League Baseball history. The best mark in Major League Baseball history.
I feel like the Diamondbacks have a lot of these teases where it's like, this guy could be good, and then he goes somewhere else.
But it's different. It's different. Max Scherzer, they let go really early.
Yeah.
They let him go really early. Trevor Bauer, they let him go really early. So these guys, they kind of got rid of them before they knew what they were. Robbie Ray was here for, it seems like, a dozen years. He wasn't here that long, but he was here for a long time. I mean, how many years was Robbie Ray on the Diamondbacks?
I'll look it up, but I
mean,
tell
he had
you,
to be here at least. I mean,
what,
he had to be here
6 years.
6 years, yeah. Like 6 years. He teased you with this incredible strikeout stuff. This, you know, he's a, you want guys that miss bats. Robbie Ray misses bats. Okay, bats swing and he misses them, but he was a tease. You just didn't know. Do you keep him? Do you? Man, a guy can't get past the fifth inning. He always had 107 pitches, by the fifth inning, you're like, okay, he can't pitch six, he can't pitch seven. Somehow he leaves Arizona and he's with the Tampa and he's with the Blue Jays right now, and he's having one of the best seasons of his career. He used to walk so many batters. Now he's not even walking batters.
He's given up more than three earned runs in a start once since May, and it was four for the Red Sox.
That's it?
That's absurd. Most of these games, like two earned last night, one the game before, one before that, two, zero, two, one. Like, he's not even giving up runs pitching in that division. No. He has a 2.71 ERA.
He's got 160-inning pitch. You know how many walks he has in 160 innings?
Not many.
With the Diamondbacks, he would have had 85. With the Blue Jays, he's got 38. He's walked 38 batters in 160 innings. Like, where was this guy in Arizona? And that brings you to the question, too. Why are the Blue Jays getting this out of Robbie Ray and the Diamondbacks didn't? Well, like, why? How are the Blue Jays getting the absolute best out of Robbie Ray, and yet when he was here in Arizona, like, you couldn't get him out of the fifth. You couldn't get him out of the fifth inning. I mean, I just want to know.
And it didn't take that long. I mean, he pitched for them a little bit last year. He pitched five games for the Blue Jays. But his first full season somewhere else, he's immediately dominant.
Yeah.
That's the thing. That's where it goes from like, oh, this is a fun game. All the names that we thought were going to be good in Arizona and then they weren't, to, wait, why are they developing for other teams and not here? Then it becomes
Taiwan
less
Taiwan Walker's
less
having a great year for the Mets right now. Uh-huh. Yeah, you look at some of these guys like, geez, like, why is this guy playing so well? But this Robbie Ray thing, is, I don't know if it's going to come back to haunt them. He's going to get paid a boatload. He's on a one-year deal. He's going to get paid a boatload of money next year. Like Patrick Corbin, they let him go. Okay, no big deal. He's Patrick Corbin.
Yeah, he went the other way.
He went, like, he's not that good. Like, you're okay letting Patrick. I'm glad they didn't pay Patrick Corbin $140 million. But this Robbie Ray thing is baffling because he's pitching out of his mind.
Michael Floyd.
Right now.
That's the first Cardinals name that came to mind when you brought that up of a guy. It's like, oh, he would occasionally have those games where, like, he's here. Geez. And then he
there you
not.
Go, Sarah. Who are the biggest teases in Arizona sports? I'm putting Robbie Ray up there. 6 years, you never really knew what you had with him. You let him go, and now all of a sudden he's the best pitcher and one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Ugh. That's nice. That's a disappointing
Luke
way to
Weaver.
Go
like,
love it. Thank you.
Luke Weaver, too. Like, Luke Weaver's this guy, six innings, four hits, one run. He's pitching to be a masterpiece right now.
All right, we come back. We'll get back into college football. Yogi Roth of the Pac-12 Network is going to join us. It's the Burns and Gambo Show on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.